Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So then the co-pilot gets on the intercom and says, hey, you've got to get back in the cockpit.
Wait, so everybody can hear him?
Yes.
Well, that's not good.
This is terrible.
That's not good. I would have seen it because I'd have been in row one, but, of course.
But then it gets better because she did not want to go back into the cockpit with this show.
Not with you.
Right. So what did he do? He got up and left and walked back to the galley.
Cannot have this.
Leaving
cannot
zero
have this.
People in the cockpit.
Cannot have this.
At which point everybody...
You got to put the inflatable doll in the cockpit at that point because you... Right from airplane. Because you cannot have this.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
We are guest loaded today, so I'm going to take the whole first segment to describe in great agonizing detail jury duty yesterday. Gary Braun is with us. Gene McManus is with us. Michael Kornheiser came to dinner last night and cooked chicken thighs, and they were wonderful, and then bolted. I mean, by 7:30, he and Liz and Bootsy were out the door.
We figured out you can use the baby as an excuse for anything.
That is, it's one of the best things about having a
left so early.
At one point, they just
looked. Michael just said, "Gotta go." And then they
where put, would he get that from?
Put Bootsy under his arm and put him into the carry-all machine, whatever that thing is.
Car seat.
And took him out. And that was it.
I assume the dishes were done eventually.
Now, was Bootsy protesting the move at all? Crying, wanting to stay?
No. Bootsy now smiles at me.
Ooh.
I don't hold Bootsy.
Only when I'm in the background.
Yes, because he's looking at Michael
and smiles at Michael.
And so he smiles at me. Nigel is here. He's going to do the news.
But Michael, do you get like a signal from Bootsy like, it's time to get him out of here?
No, I get a signal from my wife. It's time to get us out of here.
It's the eye roll.
Get out.
The French exit.
Carol was holding the baby a lot. The dog was fine. The dog was outside a lot, but the dog was
What's
fine.
What's going on with the heat situation?
Our heat is fine.
Okay.
It costs a lot of money, but that's what happens.
Right.
You have a house, you have to spend money. We're at Chatter. We have a nice crowd for breakfast, I'm happy to say.
Yeah.
At the corner of Wisconsin and Jennifer Streets in Upper Northwest, Friendship Heights, where we're going to have big-time drink specials this weekend. Right, Michael? Good drink specials.
Oh, yeah.
Very good drink specials. So let me tell you about jury duty. First of all, let me say that you probably think, oh, people come up to Tony all the time at jury duty. This is not the case. One person came up to me, introduced himself, and we have common ground, and the common ground is James Brown. And his name is Floyd Lewis, and he played at DeMatha with James and played at Harvard with James.
Oh. Cool.
He's 6'7". He's big and very pleasant. And I asked about the Harvard experience because it's a long time ago, and he went to Georgetown Law School after that, and you know, so we had a very pleasant chat, was happy to see him. We talked about James's huge weight loss over the last year or so, like over 100 pounds.
I think it was like 70 something.
And I said, yeah. James, when I first saw him, he didn't look good, but it's better now. Like he's gained a little bit of weight back and better now. So we had that. And nobody else, to my knowledge, nobody else came up to me. I'm sorry, one other person came up to me.
Wait a minute. What about...
Well, no, I'll get to that. No, but we didn't have any particular conversation.
What about a certain Murray All-Star?
That's right. So a kid who was a really great pitcher at Murray and an overall really good athlete, whose name is Shooter Star.
The best pitcher's name imaginable.
Shooter Star.
That's an actual name?
Shooter Star. Well, I think that's a nickname, but
Colt McCoy
everybody
is
called
a good
him.
Name.
Well, Star's his last
Shooter
name.
Star's his last name. Everybody called him Shooter. He came up and said hello, asked about... I think he was a year ahead of Elizabeth. I think so. Asked about Elizabeth. I mentioned Michael. And it turns out, he says, I hear about your golf game all the time because I work with Marty West. It's the amazing small world notion of everything that you do. And this happens more and more and more, which leads me to this particular story. I had brought my Binghamton hat that I hold up now for people in the restaurant to see. I brought my Binghamton hat with me to the court, you know, because I did. And I lost it about halfway through the day. I mean, I just didn't know where I'd placed it, and it was gone.
That starts to happen, Grandpa. You got to watch out for that.
I got a note about 2 hours later, a text from my daughter, saying somebody you met at the at jury duty today came to Chatter and dropped off your hat. How great is that?
How great is that?
So I was really happy about that. So now here's what jury...
How do they even know? I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be a listener to know that.
Only two people came up to me with knowledge or to say Tony Kornheiser. Right. So I don't know what jury duty is like in other places. I've only served on juries here.
Infrequent, mercifully.
Well, yeah. In Washington, D.C., 2 years and 4 months to the day that you serve again.
Wow.
They have this calculated. It is the most rapid turnaround, I'm sure, in the country. It
has to be.
It's not a state.
You can play the age card next time.
I'm going
Why
to.
Why don't you just commit a felony?
Well, then and then I don't have to.
Right.
I don't have to do
that. You can play the age card.
Another felony.
That was Michael's suggestion. That was Michael's suggestion. I commit a felony.
So I have jury duty for the first time in 2 weeks, and I've avoided it to this date, citing, you know, teacher schedule. I move every couple years, so I'm very nervous.
Yeah. So this is what happens. They ask you to report at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you can, and I reported at about 10 after.
Did you make the call the night prior?
Yes, and found out my number was there. Okay. Yes. So I knew I had to go. And you report, and about, honestly, 150 to 200 people report with you. And that was at the 8 o'clock seating. The 10:30 seating, they had another 100 or
you
something
had,
like that.
You
had the early bird.
Yeah, I had the early bird. And you walk in, you walk into a big room, and you sit. You just sit.
Bring a book or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read 200 pages of a Howard Cosell biography yesterday by Mark Grabowski. Who, by the way, I'll say this, was not kind. I mean, said that Howard was a drunken egomaniac. Mm. And that may have been true, but he was also very, very accomplished. And I just felt that he was not as kind as maybe he should have been. It's really, it's not savaging Howard, but it's an unvarnished look at Howard, certainly. Anyway, so you sit and you sit and you sit, and about 9:30, somebody comes in from the court and addresses you. So it spills out into the hallway a little bit. So we're gonna have a short film now, so you'll understand what jury duty is. I've seen this film before. It lasts about 25 minutes. And so now it's about 10 o'clock, and you just sit. And you just sit. I mean, you got to be there at 8, and you do nothing but sit. At about 11 o'clock, the same person came back and said, okay, we have three courts that need juries today, three courtrooms that need juries. Now, that's going to be a total of 36 people, and there are close to 200 people there because you never know who's going to get bounced.
Right.
And said, come up when I call your name, and this will go to the first court. And in hindsight, I was lucky I got called for this. About 60 people were called, I would say.
By name or by number?
Name and number. Mm-hmm. Name and number, about 60 people were called. After that, it's just number. In the courtroom itself, it's just number. About 60 people were called, and I would say that I was somewhere a little past half, 34, 35, somewhere in there. And everything is done by number. It's not like, you know, I'll go to the back. No, you won't go to the back. You'll go where
Get
they tell
line.
You.
Get in line.
Yeah, you go and you file in. And so at about 11:15 or so, maybe 11:30, we filed in about the 60 of us to a courtroom, whereupon I will not discuss the particular notion of the trial. I don't think that would be fair, but it was a common sort of offense in the District of Columbia. So you're asked a series of questions by the judge. If you respond yes to any of the questions, you're given a pen and a piece of paper, and you write the number down.
Your number?
No.
The number of the question. All right.
Because this is called voir dire, V-O-I-R-D-I-R-E, and this is where it is uncovered what jury will be selected. And
the prosecuting and defense attorneys
have
get
the right
to decide
to bounce.
Who they...
Yeah. Right. They have the right to bounce.
It's a screening process.
So
this is the part where George Carlin used to advocate, you should say, you'll make a great juror because you can tell a guilty person like that just by looking at them.
So yeah, I answered yes to about, there were 13 questions, I answered yes to about 5 of the questions. One of the questions was, do you know anybody in this courtroom right now? And amazingly enough, sitting in front of me is Mrs. David Alden.
Oh, my God.
She looks at me, I look at her, no. That's one of the ones I say yes to. One of the other ones I say yes to is, do you know any lawyers? Well, of course I know lawyers. Yeah. Of course I know lawyers. There's a few things, and you are admonished. This particular judge said, look, we'll let you out if you can't stay because this trial is not going to be completed today, he didn't think. That was Thursday. He said Friday the trial would not be on because you got to do a lot of catch-up on Friday from stuff during the week, administrative stuff. Monday is Martin Luther King's birthday, so he said it's going to be Tuesday. And he said, we'll let you out, but I just want you to know that in this courtroom within the last 6 months, two Supreme Court justices have sat here and haven't asked to get out. So if they don't ask to get out because they're busier than you, you shouldn't ask to get out. And I'm thinking to myself,
yeah, but they didn't.
They work 3 months a year,
right,
and they're not
they?
Picked.
And by the way, they're going to be picked.
They're not going to be picked because people be scared to death. Lawyers be scared to death.
Do you know any lawyers?
Yeah, to argue a case.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I get up there. It's my turn to get up, and I am asked, do you know somebody? And I say yes. And it's, do you know any lawyers? I said, well, yeah, I know a lot of lawyers. Oh, the question, the follow-up question was, do you think if the two of you were on the jury together, you would have any difficulty either agreeing or disagreeing?
You and the person you know.
Yeah,
I am. Okay.
And I said, well, that's totally speculative. I have no reason to believe that we couldn't function on the jury together. None whatsoever.
Were there any questions about the moon's orbit around
no,
the Earth?
No, nobody asked
like
me about that or what to do with rock salt that clumps up. No. So then about the lawyer, you know lawyers? And I go, of course I know lawyers. Everybody's a lawyer here.
Right.
He says, do you know any criminal defense attorneys? And I look at the guy, I know Abby. And he goes, Abby Lowell? I go, yeah. Then I know I'm going to be bounced right there.
Right.
Okay, because, I mean, that was too familiar. Now, I have no idea if he knew what I did. And he didn't ask me the question that that is my go-to get out of jury duty thing, which is I have a podcast.
Do you own a for-profit restaurant?
No, and I'm going to talk about this case in great detail. And by the way, when it's concluded, there's no reason you can't.
That's
public,
right. Exactly.
On the public record, I'm not going to do it in the middle. I'm not, because that's against the law. We didn't even get to that. I went back to my seat. They started filling the jury box.
Jury box.
12 people, maybe five. They say, you can go. They bring up another five. A couple more, they say, you can go. And they bring up a couple, and that's it. And they don't get to me. Okay? My great fortune was that I was not in the front of the line.
Right. Number
they
in
don't
the 30s.
Get to me. By the way, from about 45 to 60 in the courtroom, because the judge was looking at his watch, because he knew at 1 o'clock or so, he wanted everybody to have lunch, still having done nothing.
Right.
And he said, okay, we got enough. Don't worry about it. So those guys, they're not gonna serve. Now, what they tell you to do when you're done is go back, go to lunch, be back at the jury room at 2. This is about 1:20 or so when he sends everybody out. I go back to the jury room immediately. I'm told nobody's going to be there. But in the administrative offices, somebody's working. And I say the following thing. I said, look.
Give me my check.
No, I don't care about the check.
$3.40.
I say, look, do you think there's any chance that our group will be let go? Because if there is, I'd like to go because I'd like to go to work. I would like to go to work today. And she looks at me, she says, what's your name? I give her the name. She says, let me see your number. I show her number. She says, all right, get out of here.
Boom.
Whoa!
Good
excuse
move.
From
whoa.
Class. Wow.
Get out of here. You did, because clearly the other, if they had to impanel two more juries, they had enough people.
Yeah.
I was not going to be called. I mean, I was going to be released at some point, and I wasn't going to be called. So I went, I got in a cab. By the way, the cabs that I took to and from the courthouse were 7 or 8 times as much money as I was going to get paid for the day.
Oh, actually,
which was $4.
Yeah, it's nothing.
$4. And even if you say, well, why don't you take a bus or take a subway? That still would have been more than $4 round trip from where I was. There's no question about that. And I get there, and who's walking in to the PTI newsroom but Frank Isola, who's supposed to do the show if I can't do it? And I go, kid,
get lost.
And well, you know, I didn't say that. I said, Frank, that's what can I tell you? I'm here. And so I did the show. And that was. Are
Sorry.
You playing music?
Yeah, sorry about that. I was just.
You want to play me
a little
out?
Jury duty
yes.
music.
Yeah, you know? That's jury duty
so,
music.
So
yeah.
Now 2 years and 4 months to the day, I will do it again. But that was. So I was lucky.
Have you sat
once?
Years ago? But before
two,
the radio
two
show?
Times ago? No.
Oh, okay.
No, during. 2 times ago.
I think I remember
I had
talking
one trial.
About it.
Yeah. Yeah, I did one trial. Even when I said, you know, I'm going to talk about it, they said, fine. I don't care. You know, have you ever?
I was picked as an alternate on a federal court jury. But that's the only time I've ever been picked. I mean, I would go.
And
every,
you sat through the whole trial.
Had to sit through the whole trial.
And you don't
trial.
Even have a voice.
Right. And then when the jury
unless
begins
someone has
to
a heart attack or
you
something.
Leave.
Yeah, and it was a long trial. It was a civil trial. Somebody was suing Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority.
We just put it on a hot bench. Those things are over in
yeah,
10 minutes.
Exactly.
So with the exception of 4 years in college, I have lived in Montgomery County my entire life. I'm 47, be 48 in April. I'm a man. I was called once, I want to say maybe 15 years ago, and was like let out by lunch. Yeah. So I don't know. That's why your thing is amazing to me. I don't know how it works.
Live,
yeah.
What is the pool available?
Yeah.
Nigel and I live in the district. We're called all the time.
Yeah, every 2 years.
I get the summons, but then I always call the night before, and my number's not there.
Yeah, I've only been summoned once.
They've only recently established that in Washington, in D.C. We call the night before. So, of course, I was very excited. Oh, maybe I want to forgo.
No, that's fool's gold.
Exactly. Yeah.
I've gone very long, and I haven't gotten to Trump. I will just say this. Here's what I will say. CNN could not wait to use that word.
Oh, right.
They put it on the crawl. They had everybody shout it out. Other TV stations didn't. The Washington Post used it in the body of the copy, not in a headline. The Today Show today went S blank, 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 T, whole, you know. But CNN was thrilled, absolutely thrilled. Anderson Cooper, like, was bright and shining and said it 9 times in 10 seconds. And I think we're all agreed, you can't do this.
There's only one thing that surprised me about what he said. When he said he preferred to have the Norwegians come.
They don't know, but nobody's coming here from
Norway. First of all, they don't want to come here. Why would they want to come here?
There's 4 million people in Norway, and they're happy.
That he didn't say, and could they be blonde and leggy?
Right.
Those are the Norwegians I want.
It's just every time you think that you cannot top this, boom.
Boom. By the way, earlier this morning, about 7:30 this morning, Donald Trump tweeted, "The language used by me at the DACA meeting was tough, but this was not the language used. What was really tough was the outlandish proposal made, a big setback for DACA." So while no one around him has denied it, including White House staff, I guess is claiming he didn't say that.
Can I just say one sort of bleeding heart thing? My mother lived to be 97.
We're human.
In the last 3 months of her life, she finally agreed to have nurse's aides come and help her with just, you know, minor household stuff. Every single one of those women was from Africa. They were the most loving, caring people you would want to be taking care of your 97-year-old mother. Okay? That's my bleeding heart comment for the day.
We'll take a break. We will come back. Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report will join us to talk about the NFL games this weekend. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius ad. Each new year, 30% of people make a resolution to be more financially responsible. Only 30%? Most of those people don't follow through. Being responsible is hard. But what if there was a way to make a smart financial decision in as little as 5 minutes? Well, there is. It's Get Life Insurance. We tell you about it every month. Policy Genius is the easy way to compare and buy life insurance online. They let you compare quotes in just 5 minutes. It's almost unheard of to make a responsible purchase in 5 minutes. I don't know. I can do that. Policy Genius. I bought this restaurant quickly. Policy Genius has helped over 4 million people shop for insurance, the entire population of Norway, and placed over $20 billion in coverage. And they don't just insure life. They insure everything in it. You can compare health insurance, disability insurance, pet insurance, renter's insurance, so many ways to be responsible. So if you made a New Year's resolution to be better with money, achieve it at policygenius.com. It's the easy way to compare and buy life insurance. There's zero sales pressure and no hassle. And it's free. Free is the most financially responsible price. Policy Genius. Get your New Year's resolution resolved in 5 minutes. That is a well-written ad.
Thank you.
That is good copy. Did you write that copy?
I did not. No.
Michael, did you write that copy?
I'll take credit for
it. That's very, very good.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Nick Ralg, or Nick Ralg, R-A-L-G. He said, "I just wanted to send you a new song." We played his stuff before.
We have.
"I spent a lot of time getting it the way I wanted it to sound, so I hope you enjoyed. Thank you for the wonderful show and for your time. This is called Run Run. You can hear all of it at the end of this show."
And by the way, the music you played Wednesday by some kid, like a 17-year-old
kid.
That was
extraordinary.
Great.
Matt Hastings, I think it was.
Really, that was really great.
Mike Freeman joins us now from Bleacher Report. We've got 4 games to talk about in terms of analysis. But I think the story I want to start with is the Raiders and the Fritz Pollard alliance and how seriously the NFL is going to investigate this. And I think that the couple of questions that I have at the top go like this. One is, I think we know that Mark Davis has been pursuing John Gruden for years and years and years. And John Gruden is a catch. And anybody who, you know, he had turned down a whole bunch of people before. So anybody who got him would be happy to hire him. And that's one part of this. And the second part of this is, do the Raiders, do they get a break for being historically, I think, along with the Steelers, but maybe having surpassed the Steelers? They've done more in terms of diversity hires than any other team other than the original Brooklyn Dodgers, I would say, Mike. I mean, with everybody out there, can you just deal with those general issues that an owner pursuing a guy for years and years and years, does he have the right to hire, and do the Raiders get any sort of a break here?
So, really good questions. I'll deal with the second one first. Mm-hmm. So, to answer that, I would go to something that Amy Trask said. Amy Trask was
hired by the Raiders.
And first woman team executive in NFL history, hired by Al Davis, one of those hires you're talking about. And she said, no, they don't get a break. And she's right. And the reason is because the guy who did all the hiring isn't the same guy who hired John Gruden.
That's what I was going to ask you. Does Mark Davis, does he inherit, you know, a pass because he's Al Davis's son? And the answer is no.
I don't think the answer, yeah, I think the answer is definitely 100% no. And in a lot of ways, the Raiders, you know, it's called the Rooney Rule after the Steelers' late team owner, obviously, but in a lot of ways it could be called the Al Davis Rule. I mean, he did so much.
He did.
Not even with his hires, but some of the stands he took in the 60s with his teams. He went to historically black colleges before any NFL team to recruit. He did all these things. I mean, you just go down the list. In a lot of ways, the rules should be named after him. But that doesn't mean the organization gets a pass now. I mean, what they did was just, it was a total sham. I mean, it was a disgrace. And I'll give Mark Davis some credit because he admitted it. He came out and just said, yeah, I hired Drew before I fired Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it was pretty blunt and bold, but you don't get a break for that. And I think the NFL, I wasn't sure how serious they were taking it. I've heard they're taking it pretty serious because they kind of have to. I mean, Fritz Pollard is now asking for an investigation of the Alliance, and the league just looks completely asinine if they let this go because Davis sort of admitted it, and it's obvious to everybody, so they got to do something. And I think they will. And Tony, to your first point about Gruden, it's a separate thing. I think he's a really good hire. He's gonna do some really good things there. I don't know if I want to be a quarterback playing for him because he is brutal on quarterbacks.
Right.
Oh my God. But he will do some really good things there. But no, they do not get a pass. No.
But Mike, if you're a black coach, isn't there something insulting about being called in to interview for a job when it's so clear that the fix has been in for so long?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing I would say to that, and one of the answers to that is Mike Tomlin.
Mm-hmm.
When the Steelers were going to hire, they had guys they were going to hire when they were doing the interview process that they guys they really wanted, and then they interviewed Mike Tomlin. And he blew them away.
That's right.
You see the results. So I think there's a part of what you're saying, Jeannie, that's 100% true. But there's also a part of that if you get the opportunity, you're right in the pipeline.
Right.
So you've done the interview process. You've talked to owners. They will say, that guy was a really good interview. I'll either hire him or recommend him someone else. That does work. I mean, it's proven to work. Tomlin's one of a number of hires who have gotten jobs that mm-hmm. way. So it does work, but it's just not, if teams are just going to ignore it and flaunt it and thumb their nose at it, then it is true what you're saying.
So
if they look at it in a sincere way, then it can work.
Got it.
Let me get to the larger issue here. To me, well, not larger, but a large issue, and that is question one. Doesn't an owner, I mean, because I'll put my where I am on the side of the line, doesn't an owner who took the economic risk to buy a team, doesn't he have the right to hire who he wants?
Yes. I would say no question that you get to hire who you want, but you also don't get to exclude people.
Right.
and turn the whole thing into a country club and ignore that 70% of the employees are African-American. And let's be honest, too, I mean, some of these owners use all the help they need, man. Some of them are terrible at interviewing and hiring. They hire bad coaches all the time. So it's a good thing to have people to have as many options as possible and make the league as open-minded as possible. But, of course, you're right, Tony. They have an owner has a right to hire whoever they want. But what's happened over the decades, as you know, is people have been excluded. And that's where it gets ugly, and that's where there needed to be a correcting mechanism. And I think the Rooney Rule overall works. It has
so do
proven
I.
to work.
Yeah,
I think it works.
But you're right. You're right. And as long as owners are inclusive, yes, they can hire whoever the hell they want to hire.
So let me get back to Gruden. 10 years? Mike,
oh, God.
10 years?
Tony, $100 million.
If he gave him the $100 million over five, I would be less aghast than 10. 10, who lasts 10?
It's a rare thing. It's happened before, but only like a handful of times in NFL history. I mean, it's a very odd thing
wow.
to do in today's environment where things turn quickly.
Yes.
People lose patience quickly. He's going to have to win immediately and consistently. But one of the things that Davis is doing here, Tony, is he's gambling on a big name when they go to Vegas.
100%. A big, sexy hire, sell some
and
PSLs.
Stability. And this yes. is who we are going to be.
Yeah.
This is who we are.
I mean, I think it's a good hire, but it's 10 years. Wow. I mean, you'd have to go on the under, right? Right, Mike? You'd have to take the under on 10.
Versus an extension?
Yeah,
I would think so.
I'm going 5 years.
Yeah, and that's a lot.
You know, yeah.
Well, could they float him up to general manager after 5 years? If you know,
sure. If he wins the Super Bowl in five and says, you know what, I'm kind of
but they got one of the good hires they made is Reggie McKenzie is their general manager. I think what happens is he gets bumped to ownership on some level and becomes a roving ambassador or something like that. Let me go to the games. We'll take them in order. Atlanta favored over the Eagles. That's got to be because of Nick Foles and not Carson Wentz. Do you agree with it?
Yeah. There were people who thought that Foles would be able to at least be close to what Wentz was, and that was always crazy. I mean, Wentz played as well as any quarterback in the league this season. So, yeah, I think the way you're seeing the Falcons defense play, they've always had a good running game. Matt Ryan is very good. But their defense is starting to really dominate, and they're going to give Philly all kinds of problems because they're playing fast and aggressive. That's a game I could see the Falcons win. Yeah, and
okay.
and they should be favored because of the way they've been playing, the way that defense has been playing.
Okay, Tennessee, New England, 13.5, which is a gigantic number. Is the bad blood story? Yes, it could probably go up. Is the bad blood story done? Do you give Tennessee any chance whatsoever?
No, Tony.
sort of what I thought.
Sorry, Tennessee. I mean, it's just. It's hard to go into New England and beat them. It's hard to go into New England and beat them with Look, Mariota played well last week. He had some really good plays, but the Patriots are since I think 2002, 9-0 in Saturday night games at Foxborough, 9-0 at playoff games. And they're really hard to beat with a top notch offense. And that offense just isn't good enough yet. It will be. I mean, Mariota is going to be very good, but they're not ready yet.
Jacksonville goes to Pittsburgh. Jacksonville beat Pittsburgh by a lot last time. They intercepted Roethlisberger five times for touchdowns. The more interesting story to me is Le'Veon Bell, who says, well, if they franchise me again, I'm going to retire. I don't think anybody in his right mind believes that. But what do you make of that? Is that a factor at all in the game?
I don't think so. I think the bigger factor is Blake Bortles sucks.
Yes, yes.
And yeah, that is the bigger factor here in play, Tony. And which Blake Bortles will you get? Will you get a guy who's at times this year looked really good and at times this year has been so bad? Because one of the things that's going to happen is Roethlisberger is not going to throw 5 picks again.
That's right.
It's not going to happen. As good as that defense is, he's not going to throw 5 picks again. It's not going to happen. That offense is going to click. And for Bell, I don't think that'll play a factor in the game, but there's no way Le'Veon Bell retires at, what is he, 28?
He's not
going to. I mean, 26?
He's not going to retire.
No, he's not going to retire.
And that's Roethlisberger's move to threaten to retire, yeah, which he does every 3 weeks.
The move would be like to that. Threaten to not play tomorrow or Sunday. Right. That would be the move. Yeah. That would give you some leverage.
Yeah.
So Le'Veon is learning from the best, Tony.
Yes, from Roethlisberger. The most interesting game, the game that I don't know, I mean, I don't have any real idea, is New Orleans and Minnesota. You got a feeling on that game?
The thing that really surprised me last week was how Drew Brees once again just dominated the game.
He did. He did.
I mean, he was incredible last week. Some of the throws he was making, it was like vintage Drew Brees. And if you're able to see that again, and also get that running game going the way they always seem to do, they're going to be a tough, tough out. But the Vikings quarterback, he's played really well. I keep waiting for him to implode, and he doesn't do it. He just keeps playing great. So if he keeps doing that, then they're going to be, the Vikings are going to be almost impossible to beat because that defense is so fantastic. And they have a lot of talent, too, and a lot of elements that are very dangerous for teams. But watch out for Drew Brees. That's the big thing. Watch out for him.
That's the game you want to see, isn't it? Of the four, that's the game you want to see.
It's the best game. The Titans-Patriots game is going to be among probably maybe the worst. But this is the best game that the Vikings thinks because of the star power. Yeah, no question.
Thank you, Mike. Talk to you soon.
Tony, thank you. Live long and prosper, baby.
Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We'll have news when we return. And Jeff Ma, who was 5-0 last week and climbed back up to Mount 500. We'll see what he's got for us this week. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Zip Recruiter ad. A fresh new year has begun, and if you're setting new goals for your business, it's extremely difficult to reach them without the right people on your team. And ZipRecruiter has transformed how you go about finding them. That's option number one. Here's option number two. Does your business have any New Year's resolutions? Here's an important one every business should consider. Make your hiring process more efficient and effective. This year, let ZipRecruiter help. No one has done a better job of transforming how you find the right talent than they have. It seems to me that you can read them both.
Sure,
that they
why
don't.
Not? I think
there, there's
did.
No conflict.
Bonus.
There. No. In need of great talent for your business but short on time, you don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. You just need tools, the right tools. You need smarter tools. ZipRecruiter posts your job, the best words, the best schools. ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter actively looks for the most qualified candidates and invite them to apply. They even review every application to identify the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And that's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. So it's no wonder that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Right now, you can find out if you want why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. More importantly to me, right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. One more time, you can try this for free if you go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Jesse Hightower of the band Interstate Rivals. It's the last track from the 6-song EP, Creatures of the Beltway. The song is called Triangle Man. It's a true story about a guy in my childhood neighborhood, not mine, in Jesse's, who used to put up reflective triangles on the front of his house for unknown reasons. Also in the song is a shout-out to fellow
like
little
Chuck
Rudy
McGill.
Jeffries, who's probably listening now. Visit InterstateRivals.com to download the whole album for free, or come see us at an upcoming show for a CD or a tape. Yes, a tape. Michael, if people like Jesse Hightower and Interstate Rivals want to send us their music, how do they do so?
Please send your tapes into the show at Jingles at TonyKornheiserShow.com.
And are we selling anything in particular right now other than the Chatter t-shirts for $12?
Oh, those Chatter t-shirts are selling quickly.
Are they?
Yes.
Oh, Karen, that's great
to know.
Karen
coming back up here to get more
that's
of them.
That's great. So we'll get more made if people actually like them. That makes me happy.
Well, you still have thousands to go through.
But if they're selling quickly, then by 2020, we'll have to reorder.
Right.
Jeff Ma joins us now after the biggest week that anybody had all year, going 5-0. Jeff, in front of me, Jeff's podcast is called Bet the Process. In front of me, I have a book, The House Advantage, Playing the Odds to Win Big in Business by Jeffrey Ma. And this is given to me by Jack Mullen, who plays basketball with you or has played basketball with you in California. Do you remember Jack? Because he remembers you.
Jack Mullen.
He's right here. He's sitting to my left.
If he plays basketball with me, it's probably been a pretty poor experience for him. My basketball, I went from being a role player and pick up basketball that could actually set some good picks, play some good defense, and rebound a little bit, to a person who is now a diminished skills role player who can't do any of those things well. And now I can't shoot, can't do anything athletic, just challenged, but like to still play basketball as much as possible.
Jack, is that true? Is he terrible?
He's got a great three-point shot.
Nice.
Jack said
nice
he got a
distance.
Great three-point shot.
I used to have a really nice three-point shot, but I'm an all-world warm-up shooter, meaning like when there's no one around, I'm just like magic from there. But the minute that you go near me, and by near me I mean within like 6 feet of me, it all changes.
You had such a great week last week. You went 5-0. You picked all on. I was so sure you were going to lose the Georgia game. So sure on that one, and you won them all. You must feel good about that. You must.
No, I mean, well, but the thing is, like, Tony, even when I was losing and losing all those games, like, you have to stay even on this stuff. I don't think that, you know, obviously you get some breaks. The Georgia game, I was actually at the game, and I thought almost that whole game that Georgia was the better team. I was a little worried in overtime during the sack where they had Blankenship had to kick that long field goal.
Yeah.
That there was a chance at that point that I could lose that game. But generally, I felt pretty good about that game the whole time. I felt Georgia was the better team. I think that they still probably should have won that game. They got some pretty bad breaks from the referees and whatnot. But during the game, I felt like they outplayed Alabama for the most part.
Well, you're now with 5-0. You're 21-21-2. You could just punt. I mean, you don't even have to pick anything, and you've been successful. But what do you got for us this week?
Well, really, there's only two of the games that I like. I'll talk about all four of them, but the two games that I really like, the first one is Philadelphia plus the 3 over Atlanta. This line is a complete overreaction to a couple things. One, Atlanta playing pretty well last week against the Rams. You know, obviously Atlanta has the Super Bowl team last year. There's a lot of, you know, positive momentum and good opinion by the market because they believe, okay, this team has finally found it. But Philly has the best defense in the league, and even with the fact that, you know, they have Nick Foles in there instead of Carson Wentz, there's just a world where they should be a 3-point underdog at home over Atlanta. Traditionally, the bye week owners have, you know, more value here from a point spread perspective, maybe an additional point, et cetera. So this line should be Philly favored in my mind. The weather is likely to be kind of dicey, which I think will play well into Philly. It'll kind of dampen the effect of Carson Wentz versus Nick Foles. And if these two teams were playing and Wentz was the starter, what do you think this line would be?
6 at least.
Yeah, I think it'd be 6.5 or 7.
Yeah.
So you're getting about 10 points of value for Nick Foles versus Carson Wentz. And again, I think people are overreacting to the fact that the last time they saw Foles playing a significant real game, it was that, you know, that nighttime game against Oakland in really bad conditions where they couldn't do anything. And that's what they remember. But, you know, I think that was an outlier. I think Foles is a reasonable quarterback, and I think that Philly will win this game, and getting 3 points is good value.
Okay. What else? What's the other one you like?
The other one I like is the Steelers, minus the 7. Everyone is pointing back to the game earlier this season where Jacksonville really controlled and beat Pittsburgh well. But Pittsburgh actually outgained Jacksonville in that game. Obviously, the reason they lost was Big Ben threw those 5 interceptions and contemplated retirement, et cetera. But this is a Jacksonville team whose defense is a little bit overrated due to their schedule. Certainly, they are a good defense, but they are not the best defense in the league, which people are saying they are. You know, they benefit from playing 6 games against the likes of the Titans.
Yeah, they're a terrible division.
Yeah, and so that's really helped them. And I think Pittsburgh, with the rest and at home and, you know, with the focus, will be able to win this game by more than a touchdown.
Okay, and you'll stay away from the other two games. Do you stay away from Tennessee because 13.5 is just too scary?
13.5 is a lot of points. I mean, it's hard to take New England there with a 13.5-point spread in the playoffs where, you know, Mariota, I think, is finally healthy. I think he's finally playing well. If I were going to take something in this game, it probably would be Tennessee plus the 13.5. But I do think that sometimes, you know, the lines makers have made the right line at 13.5. It's too much for me to take for New England. And it's hard to back Tennessee in this situation. You know, obviously, they came off that big win, huge comeback, et cetera. But the fact of the matter is they are a below average team playing against the New England team at home in the playoffs. It just is not something that I want to take. And then Minnesota, I definitely like Minnesota. I liked them earlier in the week when the line was much lower. It was, you know, opened at -3 and then went up to -3.5. But now it's all the way up to 5. And it's hard for me to get as excited about Minnesota there simply because the Saints are a pretty good team. And, you know, these teams played in week 1 and the line was 3.5 then. And it's interesting to think about how much of this line has changed since. And I think this game will come down all to whether the Saints can protect Breeze. In that first game, Minnesota was in the backfield all the time. Everson Griffin was unstoppable. The Saints have done a much better job this year protecting Breeze. He's actually, like, by statistics, the hardest quarterback in the league to sack. And so he, you know, if they can protect Breeze, this could be a really good close game. But, if I were to be forced to pick this game, I would probably take Minnesota -5. But obviously the line has gone up since the beginning of the week, so it's lost the value to me.
I think it's smart. I mean, I don't think you have to pick everything. You had to pick everything last week because you wanted to get to 500. You got to 500. You accomplished the goal. I think this is smart. Thank you, Jeff. We root for you here. Last week I said to my son a couple of times at games, the only thing that can kill Jeff here is a pick 6. Like, I mean, be late in a game and you think, oh, my God, it's the Deshaun Kizer moment where you go, no, this is going to kill him. So I was happy for you. Thank you.
You're back. I thank you, Tony. I appreciate the support.
Yeah. Jeff's podcast is called Bet the Process. You can find it wherever you find podcasts. If you found this, you can find Jeff.
The Pennsylvania Double, Philly and Pittsburgh.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. All right. So, Nigel, you have news.
Yes, sir.
Turn your microphone on. Yeah.
Yes, I was just saying goodbye to Jeff there. Yes, indeed we do. And almost a valiant comeback by the Binghamton Bearcats the other night. They were down, 67-61 to the Wildcats of New Hampshire with 1 minute left. And is it J.C. Schau?
Schau.
J.C. Schau hit a three-pointer. And then Willie Rodriguez, otherwise known as Wee Rod, made a pair of free throws to pull within 3 points. But then Tanner Leisner hit a couple free throws, and they lose 71-67 to drop to 0-2 in the vaunted American
East. I don't
East.
Expect anybody to care about the America East if you haven't gone to one of the schools. It's a low major. But traditionally, in the last 3 to 4 years, the two worst schools in the league for basketball are Maine and New Hampshire. We opened at home against Maine. We lost by 2 points.
Yes.
We go on the road to New Hampshire. We lose by 2 points. Mm. That means we're the worst team in the America East. And this was a year that we had, and by we, I mean, I had high hopes that we could finish top 4 No, I don't. I don't.
Well, you're actually tied.
We can't beat Vermont.
UMass Lowell also winless in the conference so far.
I don't even consider it a school. come on, UMass Lowell. That's not even a school. Right. Go ahead,
well, maybe a new day is dawning. Remember, you thought the Rams were terrible to start the season too. So maybe it's upside down.
Can't beat Vermont.
Just need to play the Redskins.
Yeah. There you go. That's right. To the NBA. How about this? How about some fun games in London? Great to see some basketball in my hometown.
We say this about the NFL all the time. Why are they in London? Why is the NBA in London?
Well, it's part of the NBA global game. They're trying to present this as a global product.
Well, it is the National Basketball Association.
That's right.
Change it to the GBA.
Right. But they've been doing this for a long time. I mean, the first international game was an exhibition game between the Wizards, the Bullets at that point.
Okay, but they haven't played regular season games Europe, have they?
Sure, they have.
Regular season games?
Regular season games starting in 1990 with lots of games in Japan, game in Italy. These are not the first games in London. The Raptors and the Nets.
It's a stupid idea. Yeah, well, okay, it's a stupid idea.
Well, the Celtics win that one, 114-103.
Do your people even understand professional basketball?
We're just surprised that you get to use your hands with basketball. We thought it would be much more entertaining if you kick the ball in the basket.
It's so odd.
Yes.
It's a bad idea.
Back here in these United States. Your United States, my United States. The Cleveland Cavaliers are in a bit of a funk. Their last eight games, they're just 2-6 after getting crushed by Toronto last night, 133-99. After the game, coach Ty Lue said, "We've got to get better. We know that, but until we play better defensively, I think offensively sharing the basketball, everyone on the same page, and if guys have agendas, we've got to get rid of our agendas and play the right way."
Ty Lue is one LeBron James glance away from losing his job. It's very simple.
Just a glance, right?
That's all it
is. Are you going to feign concern here?
No.
Like, are you worried about the cat? Right. No. Doesn't matter.
Because it doesn't seem to matter for them.
No. The NBA, the regular season is nonsense. It goes on for 7 months. It's utterly meaningless until the playoffs. And of the 16 teams in the playoffs, anybody can predict 14 of them before the season starts. So it's the way it goes. You got to have stars.
To hockey, and I know you...
Hockey?
Yes.
Hockey. Gotten hockey.
The Vegas Golden Knights.
Oh, yeah.
That name is not sitting well with the United States Army. They filed a challenge with the U.S. Trademark Trial and Appeal Board saying that they've chosen to use a similar black and gold and yellow and white color scheme on uniforms, marketing, advertisements, and arena, and they basically have ripped us off for idea. And I guess there's a guy with the Vegas Knights.
Well, the owner is a West Point graduate and a donor. I don't understand this. I really don't understand this.
You don't understand why the Army would have issue with it?
You let it go. Sure, that's their name. What's it's a sports team. Nobody's confusing the two.
No.
Nobody's confusing the two. All right, that's it. We're done.
Do you want one more story from Florida?
Oh, yes.
Florida Man Friday?
Of course he does. Yeah. He said we're done. Of course that means he wants another story.
Exactly. Andy Munier decided on Tuesday night that he would let his dog out because it's something he has to do all the time. Mm-hmm. Lets his dog out, drifts outside. And as soon as he gets outside...
Let me guess.
Alligator.
Yep.
Alligator.
No.
No?
Rabbit.
I should give you the town.
Killed by a rabbit.
Yeah, vengeful rabbit for Harold the Rabbit, who was untimely demise here in D.C. No, in Naples, Florida, he turned and saw a brown or a black bear. Ooh. And he said immediately, Naples. He said everything went in slow motion. It was just as scary as you can imagine.
Get big, dog.
It was standing in front of me. I tried to turn left real quick and get back in the house, but an uppercut from the bear.
Run uppercut. Be working on that with Angie Dundee.
Right. Now, with Mickey Goldmill, his quarterman, screaming at him, Mounier was able to get up. He had a huge gash on the side of his face. Got the standing eight count was okay. Got back in his house. And then the bear at that point said, all right, well,
I'll just take the dog.
41 stitches to close up the cut, and I'll show you sort of the all the people looking at home. Sort of the cut.
It's it's top of the forehead.
So when
all
you
down.
Said an uppercut, that is a clawed swipe.
He said,
is what I'm guessing.
He said,
that's the kind of thing Isaiah Thomas steals the ball with all the time. Goes right up into a guy's throat.
Dude looks like Omar from The Wire now.
Yeah. Right. He says, I don't care if the scars or anything. I walked away with my life. It could have been a whole lot worse.
So he wasn't drunk and he wasn't high. Usually the Florida Man Friday story is involved.
Or is nude.
Right.
Yes,
sort of knew.
But a bear in Naples. So that's kind of a headline.
Naples is a pretty big city.
Yeah.
So I think the bear's ready to do parking detail at Sands Point.
There you go. Yeah, that would be great.
The new assassin.
Yeah, that's my dad used to do that. He used to slap the stickers right where you sat to drive.
With glee.
All right, we'll take a break. What do we have? We have
Old Guy Radio.
Old Guy Radio.
And Hornaday.
Is she here?
Well, she's on her way. She's the metro's a little bit slow, but she said, hold on, I just got a text from her. What did it say?
It's on fire.
No, she said, I'm going to jump off and get a lift. So she should be here presently.
Okay.
Well, if she's not, we're doing the show without her.
Yes.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is not a song I am completely familiar with. This is Marvin Johnson.
That's right.
This is the first Berry Gordy Motown song ever released 58 years ago. What is it called?
It's called Come To Me.
I remember it.
Not Come See About Me.
No, it's called Come To Me.
So I made a list in terms of critical commentary. The Four Tops, The Temptations, The Supremes, Smokey Robinson, The Miracles, Martha and the Vandellas, Marvin Gaye, Jackson 5, Stevie Wonder. Pretty good, right?
Yeah. Pretty good.
I'm leaving people out.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm leaving people out.
Mary Wells. Was Mary Wells Motown?
Yes, she was.
Yeah. Just an enormous.
Contours.
Were they Motown as well?
I think they might have been.
Did you mention Drifters?
No.
Drifters?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. And this is the anniversary.
I didn't know the Drifters. I thought the Drifters were a New York group.
Drifters were Ahmet Erdogan.
They're a New York group.
I'm not sure.
This is the anniversary of the founding of Motown Records.
58 years ago.
Yeah, 1959. It was originally called Tamla Records because he was a fan of a Debbie Reynolds song.
Tammy,
yeah, and then eventually they changed.
You wouldn't figure Berry Gordy was a big Debbie Reynolds fan.
Had that Tamla review, like a Motown.
And I guess he had co-written "Lonely Teardrops," the hit for Jackie Wilson.
Yeah.
And didn't make that much money, and said, "You know what? I really need to be owning all this stuff and be on that side of it." So
smart.
That
Drifters, in fact, New York City.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
With an $800 loan from his family, started Motown Records.
I was wrong.
Think he was able to pay them back and then cut them off, which is exactly what he should have done.
Yes.
All right, Anne Hornaday is with us, and she has one movie before I get to my rips on The Big Sick and Get Out, both of which I didn't particularly like.
Oh, geez.
And before Nigel rips the
so
commuter.
Glad I rushed in.
Yeah. Phantom Thread, which I had not heard of Phantom Thread at all till last week.
Really?
Yes. Daniel Day-Lewis.
Can't figure anything out from that trip. But maybe that's the plan.
This is the latest from Paul Thomas Anderson, who we love Nights and Magnolia and his greatest hits. And this is presumably Daniel Day-Lewis's final screen performance.
Do you believe that?
No, I don't. I don't believe that. If we take him for, what he's worth, it'll be our last chance to see him on screen. It is a very, it's a strong mood piece. This is a movie that reminded me a lot of Rebecca, the Hitchcock, that kind of gothic, mysterious romance. It's Day-Lewis plays a fashion designer in 1950s London who takes this young woman under his wing as his muse and model and lover, and it's all about their kind of psychodrama. And it's absolutely gorgeous to watch. It's just got the fashion and the beautiful photography, and Day-Lewis is gorgeous, and this new actress, Vicky Creeps, is beautiful. And Leslie,
what's her name?
Her name is Vicky Creeps. I think she's...
Creeps?
K-R-I-E-P-S. She's from...
Here's Miss Creeps.
I mean, it doesn't...
Well, I mean... Are we really going to make fun of people's names?
I do, because I've got a funny name.
I'm in no position myself.
You have a funny name.
I'm in no position.
Right.
But anyway, and then Leslie Manville, who I know you don't know her name, but...
I do not.
Wonderful British actress. And she was in... the thing I loved her the most in recently was a movie called Another Year by Mike Leigh, which was about a married couple and their unmarried friend. And she played this unmarried friend. She's just a fantastic actress. And she plays this guy's sister, who's kind of the Mrs. Danvers figure. So there's a lot of kind of intrigue and subterfuge. I kind of... Paul Thomas Anderson is very good at environments. He's very good at kind of getting you into a different world and with different rituals, as he did with Boogie Nights, with the porn community. He's not exactly a plot guy. He's not known for his twists and turns. And this is a movie that actually does have twists and turns. And I felt like it could have been a little more tight. It could have been a little craftier. in the plot department. But in terms of mood and tone and look and feel and atmosphere, it is absolutely delicious.
Is it an Oscar contender?
It probably will be. I mean, I think that it's a little bit late. Like, it's a kind of, like you said, you haven't heard of it.
I hadn't.
Right.
Nominations go in today. They're finalized today.
Uh-huh.
So the question is whether Academy voters will, you know, have it on their radar. Like, that's a really good question.
But
I don't know.
Also,
well, do they want to give Daniel Day-Lewis a send-off if, in fact, he's retiring?
Maybe. If you're an aspiring actor or actor who's overdue for an award, Gary Oldman, and you hear that this is Daniel Day-Lewis's last movie,
don't
you want to shoot yourself?
Yeah.
I'm not picking up that much buzz for him on this. He's really good, as he always is. I could see it getting those technical awards like cinematography and costume, or maybe not winning, but at least getting nominated. But I don't know. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see how it
fared. So you didn't see The Commuter?
I did.
Oh, you did see The Commuter?
I did.
Oh, I wasn't sure you were going to catch
Nigel says it stinks.
In solidarity with Nige, why should he suffer alone? I was in L.A., and I went to a press screening. Like, I kind of wanted to see how my colleagues on the West Coast do it. Exact same mall, exact same multiplex, exact same seats. It's the same. Only it's, 3 hours earlier. So, I did see it.
And this is the 33rd movie in which Liam Neeson rescues the world?
82-year-old Liam Neeson.
It's unbelievable. But the beginning was so good.
Have you already
talked about it?
No, we haven't. No, we haven't. It's
There's old. This great opening sequence.
We're not going to see it.
I know.
Right.
I will watch that on a plane. That sounds like a good plane movie.
It's a train on a plane movie.
No, you know what?
It's really not.
And this one also has its Hitchcock. Like, it's sort of like Strangers on a Train.
Yes.
Lady Vanishes. 10 Little Indians.
Do you know what it reminded
me of? Taken, of course. It's, and then there's a little Spartacus
Taken
in there.
Taken is great.
Well, I know, but this is Taken, what he's trying to do. He keeps trying to reproduce
any
that.
The Gray? Yeah. Is there any Gray tie-in? I like The Gray.
The Gray was so good.
I know. Yeah. He was good in The Gray.
It reminded me of a movie called Source Code, also starring Vera Farmiga.
Kind of a real time
thing. I saw that.
Yeah.
I liked that movie.
Like, the whole thing
that's
is like,
with Jake Gyllenhaal.
That's a great,
I liked it.
That was a terrific movie. This one, it's sort of like, all right, you've got to find this person. You know, you don't know what they look like, but then
Liam Neeson.
It's just preposterous.
I'm guessing she's in on it.
Liam Neeson is going to know how to do this because this is his skill set.
Wheelhouse. Yeah. But it's so preposterous. I mean, I was with it for a bit, and then it's just, it's so preposterous. And,
Predictable.
And I was sitting there thinking, I just wrote this book this past year about how to tell if a movie's any good. And I focused a lot on the screenplay, right? Because that's the founding document of a movie. It's all there. And I just kept thinking, like, they couldn't give it one more pass to kind of tighten up these loose ends. Like, I can't believe what gets through these days. It's just, it's shocking to me that somebody didn't say, this is really stupid. And it could have been good. Like, it didn't have to be.
Right. And you're right. The beginning is interesting.
Because I love that beginning
sequence. As The Commuter, they just show him day after day after day. They have this montage of waking up and going.
His routine.
Yes, the whole routine.
It's really sweet with his family. It's really cool. I just thought, that gave me this hope. I was like, this might actually be good. But, of course, it's January. Of course. Yes.
So instead, I'll just watch that bit with him and Gervais and Merchant over and over again when he says he wants to do stand-up comedy.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
Yeah, you do that one
extras?
If you haven't seen it. What was that? Life is Short?
Life is Short. Yes. I didn't watch that one.
Yeah. Can I get to these two movies? And I know they're in your top 10.
Okay.
Both are in your top 10.
All right.
And they are both comedy movies, right? They're,
the genre would be
comedy.
Yeah. They're mashups.
One is The Big Sick, and one is Get Out.
I'm pretty sure that wasn't a comedy.
What?
Get out?
Yeah,
it has comic satirical elements.
That's what I liked about
satirical
it.
Satirical thriller.
It lures you in thinking it's a comedy and then
wasn't
gets
that
dark.
It was just the Golden Globes? Wasn't it that the nominee was in as a comedy or musical?
So this was a movie much favored by critics, certainly much favored by Ann and Arch. Really, really liked this movie.
Okay.
Arch thought it was like the best movie he saw all year and insisted that I see it. Twice I took a shot at seeing it, and after 15 minutes, just couldn't get there. Last night, I watched the last hour of it. And the last 20 minutes, 30 minutes is terrible beyond words. It never rose to where I thought the satire was good enough, to where I thought the horror was good enough. I just didn't. It was a loser for me.
But you only watched. Tell me more. So, did you actually watch the whole thing from beginning to end?
I probably missed 15 minutes total.
Well, you know, this is. I have to say, Tony, I give you passes when you say you walk out and this and that. But this is the movie you really do need to see the whole thing. Sitting down in one, and also, I will say,
I picked it up from the big party.
It doesn't
matter.
You have to be in the world. See, I don't think you're giving it a. I don't think that's fair to the movie. You can't just pick and choose
and then say
that the movie failed. You know, I blame myself.
No,
and you have to at least meet it halfway.
And I think
meeting it halfway if you're kind of picking and choosing and not seeing 15 minutes. That's just not fair.
The strength of that movie is, to me, that you sit down comfortably thinking you're watching a comedy, and then it's just the way it tightens its grip.
Yeah.
And if I can just pile on. Bailing because, as you did the first couple times, because it, quote, made you uncomfortable.
Yeah, I didn't like
defeats
it.
Defeats the very, I mean, I think it was supposed to make That's you right. uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah, but it made me too uncomfortable.
I'm in my house.
I don't want to see it.
I feel bad because I wanted to like this, but I'm sort of on your team. I just didn't like as much as I thought I would.
Wait, now let me get to the big sick.
Wait a minute. I want to say one more thing about The Get Out. I think that also is a movie that really benefits greatly from seeing it with people.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons why it was such a huge success. Because
I saw
it
with
was
a dog.
Well, that's not because
how
when
do you
you're
think the
in
dog
a,
felt.
Because when you're in a room, when you're in a room and you're going through what Jeannie just said, that journey, and you're realizing what's going on, and then the jump scares start coming in and people are kind of jumping up, that's fun.
I did not see it in the theater, but the last scene when the person emerges from the police car without spoiling anything, I can imagine that in a theater.
It's amazing. Yes. So then you're kind of, so I can imagine that if you're watching it alone or with your dog, you're not getting some of the pleasure, you know, that I think a lot of people had with it in
but
the
you're
theater.
Also entitled dogs to not like it.
Take the dog to
of course you are.
Yeah, you're just wrong.
But I do think, though, I really, on behalf of these filmmakers who work so hard on these movies, really, to say that you only watched, like, I have to say, you have to at least cop to the fact that you didn't see it under ideal circumstances.
I did not.
So
three times.
And I actually to me, it had the feel of someone who was not a veteran filmmaker, which, of course, Jordan Peele was not. But it had sort of this very indie feel to it. I mean, it lacked some of the polish, which maybe with all the hype and stuff you were expecting and just weren't getting. But.
I saw it 2 days after The Big Sick, which I didn't like either.
So tell us about that.
Now, I watched that beginning to end.
Okay.
Well, first of all, it's not funny. He's a stand-up comedian, and he's not funny. Mm. I mean, and that really hurts a movie when the lead character is supposed to be funny, and he's not funny at all. I would say that if I had to describe that in one word, it would be unbearably long, which is two words. It just went on and on and on. Every single scene with Ray Romano was terrible. Absolutely terrible. I just wanted it to end. I think the girl's great.
Zoe.
I don't know who she is.
Zoe Kazan.
I thought she was great, but I felt nothing special for the male lead, and it bothered me that he wasn't funny. And you know what it struck me as? It was like it was the Pakistani version of My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Oh.
It was just a B movie to me.
I totally disagree, but that's
no,
that's
I know,
a horse
but
race,
I, you had it in the
yeah.
Now I'm worried about Mudbound. Which I got, and I'm worried that I'm not going to like that either. But I think I want to like that.
Well, don't watch that in segments either. Sit down and commit.
To The Big Sick. Okay. I just didn't like it. Now you're very disapproving of me, Anne, which I really appreciate.
No, I'm not. I don't. I mean, it's like you said, everybody is entitled. I mean, nobody's.
Did you see that one too?
I have not seen that. No, did you it came highly recommended
no.
to me.
But I will say this:
I haven't seen that one yet.
There was a movie this year that David and I went to see, and we both simultaneously in a theater fell asleep. During it. And later I criticized it to my sister and said, you know, we fell asleep.
Which was it?
It was the Thor movie.
Thor Ragnarok.
Oh,
yeah.
That's interesting.
We actually fell asleep. And my sister pointed out that perhaps it hadn't been given a fair shake if we fell asleep.
You know, it's...
So because I wanted to like these movies. I mean, my taste is my taste. Like, I love I, Tonya. I love it.
Right.
It gets better with each movie I see progressively.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I know you can't get over the fact that Margot Robbie cannot play a 15-year-old.
Yeah, I had trouble with that. And I thought there were parts where it dragged.
Oh, I totally disagree with that.
I thought it went 100 miles an hour.
I did too. That's 100 exactly
miles an
how
hour.
I would describe
and
it.
And I haven't seen any other movie this year that has done that for me.
Yeah.
And like last year when both you and Arch said Hell or High Water.
Oh, yes.
Love it.
That was awesome.
It was the best movie I saw.
Yeah. That was good.
So. But a movie can be victim of expectations. So Anne, for instance, goes to see Get Out with no expectations whatsoever.
That's true. That's a very good point, Gary.
And then you're seeing it sort of at the opposite end after it's been so highly recommended. Yeah. It's so revolutionary. People, and you're sort of like, I don't get it.
That's a really good point. Yeah. And you know, another movie that I think people are having that reaction to is Lady Bird. Because we all went gaga over Lady Bird.
I'm waiting to see that.
And then people are seeing it going like, yeah, it's fine. But I mean, my God, it's not like, you know, she didn't cure cancer, and it's and so I think that's absolutely true, Gary. It's like we're seeing it first, and we're so excited, and then
It's an interesting
you have to
one.
Kind of put it in perspective.
I finally saw the three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Yes, I wanted to talk about that,
which is because
it's rough.
The first,
it's a hard
that,
watch.
People are like, oh, this is
we talked
great.
About it last week on the air,
but, right? So I went into it with all sort of like the even the comeback, being like, well, I didn't like it as much as I first did. I thought it was a really, really well-made movie, but very tough. And I'm not sure if I really, truly loved it. I love the performances.
I'll tell you, that movie, and we can talk about
that
it.
That did great on the Globes.
It did. And I feel like, and then I had dinner last night with some friends who loved it. This is connecting with people in a way I just would never have anticipated. And I think it's because it's a powerful experience to watch it. You're kind of swept up in this unbelievable character in this whirlwind. She's a dervish, you know, and you're kind of blown away by what goes on. And it's only in the fullness of time where you kind of think back and go, well, that was a little contrived, or that character was a little.
Well, Sam Rockwell character is a cartoon.
Yeah, it's like
character.
It doesn't hold up.
Not to
Except
me.
But the experience of watching it is very powerful.
I agree.
And it's like it's grip. I mean, it's like
it
that does
you.
Go 100 miles
and
an hour.
And movies have contrivances. I mean,
yeah, but this one has
Darkest
too many.
Darkest Hour has a big contrivance.
The subway scene.
The one that
to me. Three Billboards is contrived all the way through. So, okay,
I agree.
You're in it. You're on that crazy wild ride. And that's why it worked for me. And it's a movie that I have thought about afterward more than any of the other movies that I've seen this season.
So it holds up for you?
Mm-hmm.
See, it doesn't hold up for me.
I thought that Frances McDormand, of all the things, I think I said this on the air the other day, of all the things that were said at the Golden Globes that everybody raved about,
God.
That one line, we didn't come here for the food.
Yeah, that I agree.
Better. I mean,
Tony,
God bless
I totally
Oprah,
agree with
but
you.
That,
I totally agree with you.
That's the line of the night.
She was my Oprah that night. I almost levitated when she came.
That's just
the entire, the way she walked, the way she shook everybody. She is
didn't
a
have a lot
bad
of makeup.
Oh,
ass.
No. Did not
she
come
didn't
out.
Any makeup.
Come out looking as if she was glammed
God,
up.
That woman is my spirit animal. I just think she's the best.
All right, we get out of here. We will come back with email and jingle.
Yes, an email about your possible future residence.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Ingleside.
My new favorite song.
Someday my poem will be arts and crafts, song and dance. I just want them to feed me. Leave me alone, I just want liquor. But liquor is not there. Ingleside, Ingleside, Michael, don't make me go.
That is sent in by John Edwards in Lennoxville, Quebec. And it is sung, he wrote the lyrics,
like
Kirsten Olmstead.
JJ,
Kirsten Olmstead singing, Brad Weiss background vocals and on the mandolin. This is my future.
I will pay cash money to get the official Ingleside choir to perform this song.
That is
beautiful.
They're all wearing ties and jackets. It's just, it looks so awful. I mean,
you don't dress up for dinner at 4:30?
Assisted living is bad enough, but assisted living on a formal setting is just dreadful. Before we get into the mailbag, let me thank Ann Hornaday. Let me thank Mike Freeman. Let me thank our predictive genius, Jeff Ma, host of the podcast Bet the Process, for being on the show. I'd also like to thank our sponsors today, ZipRecruiter and Policy Genius. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Mike Walichko in Chicago, That was the best Thursday show to date. Keep up the great work. That was yesterday when I was on jury duty.
It was a great Thursday show.
From Charlie Burtz in Springfield, Virginia. Can I ask a practical question?
No.
Isn't it time to start calling Tory's place Camelot?
Ooh.
Because of the camels.
Yeah, nice.
Very
good.
Do like the camels. From Brandon Borzelli in Lebanon, New Jersey. Understanding the moon's position in the sky is a lot like trying to understand cross-country skiers in a snowstorm. You aren't sure when they will show up or where they will show up, but if you step outside and look left, right, behind, or in front of you, you usually spot one within a minute. You are endlessly fascinated by...
I told you earlier I could have listened to that forever. I love you trying to figure out the Earth's relation to the moon and sun and what moves around who.
And we're asking if we stood still.
Yes.
Well, was my favorite.
Okay, we're all moving, right? But yes. We're all moving at different rates.
Well, we are both rotating and spinning.
But again, the sun, you can, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west.
That's right.
Well, and appears to, but the sun is actually stationary. Because the sun, much like you, is a star. It stays still, and things revolve around
but
it.
But my point is that the sun, at any given time during the day, you pretty much know where to look for the sun.
Directionally, yes.
And the moon is, that's not like that at all.
Yeah, well, the moon just, it does its own thing, I guess.
Carl in Oswego, New York writes, Dear Dr. Mr. Tony, here's a summary of how the moon moves as I understand it, and how I would explain it to my 8 and 10-year-old children. When you watch the moon move across the sky at night from the east to the west, that is mostly due to the Earth's rotation. Recall that the Earth spins around one time in approximately 24 hours. The moon does orbit around the Earth, but that orbit is a relatively slow one. It does one lap around the Earth every 29 or 30 days. You will notice that the moon always rises about 45 to 60 minutes later than it did the night or day before. Example, suppose you see the moon a little bit above the eastern horizon as you walk the dog at 5 a.m. The next day at 5 a.m., you might see the moon closer to the horizon. It will show up 45 to 60 minutes later than the morning before. That small difference in where the moon is, let's say maybe 15 degrees in the sky, is how far the moon has moved over the last 24 hours.
An hour late? No, I don't understand how it would be an hour later every day. So a week later?
45 minutes.
So a week later, it's coming up 5 hours later?
Where you see...
Oh, from where you
where you see the moon. If you stand in the same spot at the same time
every night... We might need to do a second hour today.
The moon will move. That's my point.
Our NASA guy, Noah Petro, is coming in to see us on Monday, so perhaps he can give us a demonstration.
Okay. Also, don't be freaked out when you don't see a full moon during February. This year, we are having 2 full moons in January and 2 again in March, so February will not officially have one due to that 29 to 30-day thing we mentioned earlier. Hope this helps. I'm here if you have any further questions. I also got from Benjamin Dobbs. He sent me, remember I said that I thought that Band and Dunes was in Bend, Oregon? Mm-hmm. In fact, it's 261 miles west of Bend, Oregon. It's west of Eugene. It's on the water, isn't it? It's on the Pacific
Bandon
Ocean.
Bandon is, yes.
Yes.
Well, be surprised at how many emails you received about a golf course.
No, I like that. Jonathan, we should do a golf show more often. Jonathan Barnett at Wisconsin Rapids. Regarding your salt issue, salt dissolves in water. The most likely problem is the summer humidity did some slight dissolving and then evaporated later, causing that salt to crystallize again. Since the existing salt crystals were touching each other, the new crystals could have connected several crystals into a larger crystal. What you can do is lift the salt bag over your head and then forcefully drop it to a level, hard surface. If this is physically possible for you, please have someone record it and share it. My guess is the Sheehan boys can handle it for you.
It's a canister for you, not a bag.
I was going to hit it with a screwdriver. Just bang it with a screwdriver. I haven't done that yet, but I'm going to have to do it because we're going to get snow next week. If you're out on your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
What a waste of time.
Thanks for coming, everybody. Thank you.
You wish me hearts and love. I think about that light on you. I think about what I missed to her. And you never knew that. let go, cracks and fled. The promise is broken long after the dead. Remember December, the last of evil. Won't follow the ladder.
Rudy, Zach, and Diego bring it up to the day.